Hey, it's Mike Evans. People care about three things when buying a vehicle. Number one, price. Siltahar Motors has the best prices and financing options that fit everyone's current credit and financial situation. Get zero down and 0% financing for 72 months. Number two, selection. Siltahar's five dealers in one offering Ford, Lincoln, Mazda, Volvo, and Maserati with hundreds of new and used cars, trucks, and SUVs on the lot. And number three, location. Siltahar's right off Highway 36 in Wadsworth, or view their entire selection online at sthmotors.com. Siltahar Motors. Get everything you want out of a dealership.
It's Legends Week. Oh, man. Legends Week is powered by Siltahar Motors, and our guest today is Ryan Spielborgs, one of my favorite guys is Spilly, and... Spilly, you're on Legends Week. You're a legend.
You guys must be scraping the bottom of the Fender Sports barrel. I mean, if I'm a Denver legend, was Terrell Davis not available this week?
Terrell Davis was available.
Terrell Davis was there.
You guys didn't have Helton's number or Walker's number?
We had Walker on. I think Helton was on one of the other shows, I believe. But we had Larry on Monday.
All right. I'm trying to figure out where there's no way I'm a Blue.
Right, well,
legend.
I mean, if we're telling the truth.
I appreciate it, but I feel like... I mean, that's a bit of a stretch, but yes, I will gladly take it.
Yeah, Ryan, I mean, if you want us to tell the truth, I mean, we called about 25 guys, couldn't get them on, and so, you know, then we landed on you, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, see, call it what it is. I mean, call it what it is. I'm glad to be here. I love catching up with each other. I love catching up with you, D-Mac. Anytime I can be on the show with you guys, I look forward to it.
Well, listen, the reason why when your name popped up and I said yes, Spilly makes sense in terms of Legends Week. It's not just because of your, you know, baseball playing with the Rockies. Although the time that you spent with the Rockies, Spilly, was arguably the most successful time in Rockies history, by the way, the span that you were with the team. But it wasn't just that. It was because I think you are becoming connected to the Rockies in a way that very few players becoming broadcasters become. However, when it happens, the legendary status of that person grows and grows and grows. And let me give you a very specific example. When I was growing up as a Red Sox fan, of course, I'm a short guy. Well, I liked all the other short guys, right? I was always a short guy. I like short guys.
Got to stick together.
Like Rem Dog. Yeah, you love Rem Dog.
You're going exactly where I'm going. So, and I don't know if a lot of people around here would know who Jerry Remy is, but yeah, I loved Rem Dog. Never mind that he was actually from the Boston area too, but I loved him as a player. Now, Jerry Remy didn't have the longest playing career with the Boston Red Sox, but he took his playing career with the Red Sox and built it into a literal broadcasting legend. And you can make the argument, yeah, Seriously, that this guy, Jerry Remy, is more popular than any other current player right now on the Boston Red Sox, and may mean more to the community as a broadcaster because we feel a bond with those people that bring us the games. Now, obviously, you're connected with our great friend Drew Goodman, who we hold in very high esteem as well. But, Spilly, maybe we can start on this note. How has the transition from you coming from a player into the broadcast arena changed your perspective and how you're recognized in terms of your connection with the Rockies?
Yeah, good question. My perspective of this game has evolved. And I think it's evolved in many different forms, both as like a historian, as somebody that appreciates the greats that have come before me, really diving deep into what it means to be a broadcaster, what it means to paint a story, what it means to spend 3 hours or so, you know, the honor that it is to be able to go into somebody's household every single night and be part of their family, be part of their dinner. Be part of their evening routine. You know, baseball is different than any other sport. It allows, you know, people to get an escape. It's cathartic. It's You know, it's a connection to your family. It's a connection to the past. It's a connection to the community. There is no script to what you're watching. It's live entertainment, unscripted. It's real TV. So all those aspects in the last couple of years, I think it's grown for me. My love of what I do has grown. And I think part of the reason why, you know, a guy like Remdog has become what he is, especially in that community, is that we embrace the community. I love Denver. I love the players that I cover. I love being around baseball. I love, you know, sharing a stupid story or one that's, you know, really important and pointed. You know, you really have to love what you're doing. And to be honest, and Tyler will get this too, as an athlete, when you're growing as a broadcaster, we're learning in front of people. And, you know, you're kind of naked as you're basically learning on the fly. And it's scary, you know, like it's a scary feeling. It's not something we were trained to do. It's not something that's comfortable. And, you know, it takes a lot of work and it's a craft. It's not a talent. And that's the biggest separator. And I've learned that pretty early on. As much as I think my personality and my ability to speak is going to carry me, this is a craft that you have to spend a lot of time on to get better at.
Did you have any idea that you wanted to do this? I mean, I know when I was playing, the last thing in the world I thought I'd ever be doing is talking into a microphone and being one of those guys that I hated my entire career, you know? But then you get done and you're kind of like, well, dang it. Like I love football. You love baseball. I guess we could go coach. We could go get into that circuit, or we could kind of go talk about it and use our knowledge. We basically have a PhD in our relative sports, and it'd be a shame to let it go to waste. But I don't know. I mean, for me, I kind of fell into this to one degree. I'm just kind of curious, for you, was this something that you always wanted to do?
No, absolutely not. I'm in the same boat as you, Tyler. I thought I was going to play forever. I never saw my career beyond putting on a baseball uniform. I had no idea what was outside of baseball. I think I had tough realities kind of hit me. Was playing in Japan. And, you know, my wife and kids are there for about 2 months and then they leave. Mm-hmm. My daughter had like a weird little infection. It was nothing big, but, it just didn't feel right for my wife. And so they left. And so I'm basically overseas at 33 years old. At times I'm in the minor leagues. I'm questioning what I'm doing because I feel like I'm a mercenary. And you know, by the time I got back, I didn't realize what 5 months away from the family as a FaceTime father would do. It fractured us. It took every bit of about a year to mend a relationship with my wife because there was, you know, she was solely dependent and the kids were solely dependent upon her. And so it was a harsh reality, you know, like if I was going to continue playing baseball and if my career was as a minor leaguer or continue to play in Japan, I'm assuming my family wouldn't have been standing there by the end of that career. And I was fortunate enough to have people like Clay Paolo, who's been with AT&T for about 15 years, and Kenny Miller, who's now an executive with Altitude Sports, that, you know, they were looking for an eventual replacement of George Frazier. They wanted some a young broadcaster and broadcasters, you know, Corey Sullivan and Jason Hirschfeld into that category too. And, you know, they asked me if I wanted to take a chance on broadcasting, and it couldn't have come at a better time and a worse time at the same time, because it forced me to make a decision that I wasn't prepared for. And I took that jump.
Getting back on the road again.
Yeah, I took the leap and, you know, like it's been a wild turn of events in the last 10 years, to be honest. When I think back at it, I live a charmed life. There's no question. But one of the things that struck me more than anything, and Tyler, you'll probably understand this more than DMAC. You know, one of the reasons why Kenny Miller offered me the opportunity to get this was because I was nice to people in a clubhouse. Mm-hmm. That was it. It had nothing to do with, like name recognition or anything. And it's a valid reminder of how you treat people. as an athlete, because your career off the field is a lot longer than your career on the field, how you treat somebody in that locker room that may have, especially in this time and age when, you know, there's so much to talk about with pandemic and people struggling, being human and being nice to somebody is the simplest thing you can do. It's also really difficult to be conscious about it. And fortunately for me, being nice was what gave me the opportunity to be a legend in Denver, according to you guys.
That's definitely right. And I want to get into the baseball end of things with you in just a second. But I am curious, when you were playing for the Cebu Lions in 2012, I am curious if there was a moment that you still remember to this day that you questioned what you were really doing, like where you were when that moment hit you. I am curious if you had like a moment.
Last game of the season. My cousins from the States, I have a Canadian cousin that was a professional motocross rider, and I had another cousin from my mom's side who's a strength and conditioning coach. They came out and visited me in Japan, and we had a night out in Roppongi, and I'm hungover, and I had an early morning minor league game that they were supposed to come and see me play. They didn't come see me. The last game of the minor league season, I made two errors at different points on the major league team and got sent down to the minor leagues because they said my defense was no good. I was a defensive replacement at the major league level. I replaced major leaguers defensively at the major league level for a long period of time. So I made two aggressive errors and I got sent down to the minor leagues. And during that time in the minor leagues, I led all of Japan in hitting. I led it. Like the entire league, I had the highest batting average and it wasn't even close. And so I'm hungover. I'm on this minor league diamond. There's no fans. There's a giant overpass. There's catchers down the right field line using a pitching machine to work on catching pop-ups.
Oh
my last
God.
At bat in the seventh inning, and I didn't know it was the last at bat in the seventh inning. I hit a homer to dead center, around the bases, touch home. There's nobody there. I look around. I sit down at the end of the bench. The manager comes up and goes, "Mowati," which means you're done. And I just sat there and I'm like, what the hell am I doing here?
You know what, Ryan? That's very similar to my walk-off moment when I won the Super Bowl and I was like, I'm just done.
That's an amazing moment, man. So, like, you just knew it. You knew it.
I don't want to say I knew that was the end, but in the back of your mind, I mean, like at that time, D-Mac, and you know this as a baseball coach and you see it,
mm-hmm.
when you get a kid that clicks his swing in and it's the end of the season, you know, you tell him like, hey, man, great job. Way to finish hard.
Absolutely.
Way to finish on a good note.
Absolutely.
And you want them to keep carrying it forward during the off season, but in the back of your mind as a coach, you're like, crap, he's probably going to lose it. Mm-hmm. That's what it felt like. I went 2 years of trying to find my swing after having plantar fasciitis and losing my mechanics to spending an entire summer in Japan finding my swing. And, you know, my swing was there. I got it. Mm. It was back. Mm. And, you know, and to kind of just be at that spot where you're like, I'm fixed, but I don't think anybody wants me. That was like, it was an awkward moment, to be honest.
Yeah.
You work so hard to get to that spot where you're like technique wise, and you guys get this as coaches and former players, getting the technique of something and feeling like you're in the right place is the entire battle about being an athlete. It's that confidence battle. It's that working when nobody's watching. It's that extra work in the mirror. It's all those things. It is hours and hours and hours of people investing time and effort into you. And that happened. I was invested in by my Japanese teammates and my coaches. And then they got me to a place where I felt like I was back. And that was it. And so, like, in the back of my mind, there's zero regrets. But it is strange to leave it at that spot where you just don't know what would have happened.
I want to take you back. You actually have an anniversary. Yesterday was an anniversary for you. Do you know what it was?
So let's see. September, July. What day are we?
We're July 17th.
July 17th?
Yeah.
So I would have made my major league debut.
There you go.
On the 16th. Yep.
And you got your first
Cincinnati.
Hit.
Got my first hit, yep, off Todd Coffey. Remember that game really well. Side note, something that, like, sticks with me, and this goes, again, like, people helping people. My agent at the time, his name is Bill Schuper. You know, my family isn't a wealthy family out of Santa Barbara at all, and he paid to fly my entire family out to come watch me play.
Wow.
And it was really cool to have the, you know, to think about the coaches along the ways, right? Your little league coach, your high school coach, your summer ball coach, and then to kind of get a culmination. I think about that a lot. You know, like, I have a picture. It's, you know, my mom, my dad, sister, and future wife all there.
I love it.
It was all paid for from an agent. You know, he paid to get them there so they could watch me. It was really, really cool.
But
it was cool, and I still hold bragging rights that I led the Rockies in batting in 2005.
Right, because they send you down. You come up for a game. You get the hit. It's July. Here we go, right? And then you get sent back down. Why did you get sent back down? And that was the only game you played for the Rockies that year.
Yeah, Eric Burns. Eric Burns is the reason I got sent down. The Rockies made a trade for Burns. He came from Baltimore. Burns was terrible. He ended up getting with the Arizona Diamondbacks the next year, and we got to boom 2 years later. I blame Eric Burns, and I blame Matt Holliday. He had a fastball off his finger, which, you know, is like a comedy of errors that got me to the big leagues. There must have been five injuries over the course of 2005 to get me to the big leagues. I was literally the last man standing. I was the Cleveland Indians roster. Like, this guy's dead. To be honest, one aspect that September call up and then not getting called up in September, that pissed me off to a level that I'd never been upset before, because I felt like the organization after that entire year, I set a record for doubles, that they didn't believe in me.
Mm.
And I know that's not the case, but that's how I took it. That was the feel that I used. And I ended up going and playing in Mexico. I took that time to continue to prove to everybody that I was a major leaguer. You know, like, it's disheartening, I think, in general, when you look at a career or opportunities and you think of, you know, movies like Field of Dreams, and you get a guy that gets to the big leagues like Moonlight Graham, or, and there's plenty of stories of guys that get there and they never get the chance to play or fulfill their dream to a level, you know, that feels right. You know, like, that made me so upset that I was like, I hit 340 for a year. I was part of a team, and now I'm not part of the future down the road in September, where I have a chance to prove that I can play. I needed that, to be honest.
Wow.
I needed that motivation to basically tell everybody, all right, fine, I'll prove it to you every single day that I'm better than what you think.
So it helped in the end. And then in 2007, although you started with the in AAA, you came up to the big club. And that was the year, Spilly, that, I mean, I get tingles just thinking of what that World Series run was like. And, of course, it didn't, you know, work out all the way. But still, when you think of that 2007 year, and you were a big part of that team, you were a major part of that team, what did it mean for you to be part of, to this point, the most successful Rockies team of all time?
I get floored by thinking of what that group meant. You know, I think Tyler gets it. You're in a professional sport, which is a selfish environment to begin with. It is about individual stats and results. It's about, you know, playing in a small window and trying to maximize opportunity so you can have financial stability for the course of your life. That's what professional sports is. That's what it's bred to be. Winning is a byproduct of guys that say, you know, I don't care about that. I care more about my teammate. I don't care about, you know, let me worry about free agency when it gets there. Let me worry about arbitration when it gets there. I care more about winning because I love the guy next to me, and I want to earn my stripes with this group. that is, it seems like the simplest thing to try to get a group of guys to buy into each other, to believe in each other, to play a game for each other. But it is so hard because there are so many things outside of the game that are noisy to an athlete that you lose track of that. This year is an abbreviated season for all of baseball. It's really, really cool because players can't worry about stats for what it means for arbitration or long-term financial goals. It doesn't. You have to worry about a win and a loss. And that 2007 team, since, you know, the guys have seen each other from the minor leagues, they fought with each other, they got better with each other, you know, they made money with each other. But ultimately, what boiled down to it is that entire group loved one another and they wanted to play for one another. That was it.
Yeah.
That was literally it. It was as simple as that. But you know, I'm telling you, that is the hardest thing in all of sports, is to get a group of people to pull in the same direction.
Fascinating.
Doubt about it. I mean, that's the difference when it comes down to it. You know, when you talk about a championship team or a team that has got the ability to go compete for it, you know, it's that brotherhood. It's that bond in that locker room. It's the ability to trust them to make the move at the right time and all those sorts of things. Hey, you just had a comment about the abbreviated season and how guys are going to feel the pressure a little bit more. This is unique. I mean, baseball players, man, it's you kind of feel a little bit relaxed. You drop a game, you drop five, it's kind of like no big deal. We got a long ways to go. How do you think we're going to see that unfold in a tangible way in which you can tell, you know, managers are making decisions, maybe with pitching, with the rotation, or however it might unfold, in which, wow, every single game is insanely important this year? How do you think we'll tangibly feel that?
Just look at the highlights of the headlines of what just happened with roster move decisions the Rockies just made about an hour ago.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not capable of getting an out, if you're not a part of the team that's going to function to help get a win, you're not on the team. You're not going to be there. A manager like Bud Black, and the biggest challenge from what I'm looking at, not only, I mean, guys, look, this season, I would be surprised if we finish this thing without a hitch. We are about to see, you know, the amazing amount of work behind scenes to keep hotels and travel and all these protocols in place to keep the players from catching COVID. And I don't, it's not a political statement. I don't know how the hell it ever turned into that, but wearing a mask and protecting this group is of paramount. Like, imagine this. And I know people say, well, you know, these guys that do get COVID, they're fine. Yeah, but they're out for 2 weeks. If Nolan and Trevor Story get COVID the last week of September and you lose them for that, the final 10 games and not even the playoffs, what does that mean for your season? So this season is truly fascinating to watch because there are so many variables in place here. And when you look at a bullpen and arms and pitchers and how do you push them? What's the proper pitch count? How quickly can a team recover? You know, age is a factor now. Velocity is a bigger factor. Your ability to put the ball in play is a bigger factor. Turning a double play, running the bases, going first to third, all these little things that we have at times we put it to the side, those are going to be magnified to a level that you've never seen before. And that's why I am so fascinated. I'm excited. I'm nervous.
Mm.
This is a social experiment. I think if we've looked at any other sports to kind of show us the way, we don't really have that, because other than women's soccer that has done a really good job in their bubble, Major League Baseball is about to embark with 30 different teams with different protocols in every single area. Good luck. It's fascinating to see what happened.
A retrospective of Ryan Spielberg's would not be complete without the moment. And I think Tyler actually had an interesting moment as Tyler went in with Peyton Manning in that Chargers game. I mean, it was a moment, no doubt, not only winning the Super Bowl, but you know what moment I'm talking about, August 24th, 2009. Before I play the clips, Billy, what was the count?
1-0 count.
Let's go.
Ryan, 1-for-6. In the air, deep right center field. Way back. Rockies win it!
a long game, 14th
what a
inning,
moment, man.
Grand slam walk off, the belt is flying. You're screaming at the who are you guys, the Giants, to get off the field. When you think of that moment, when you close your eyes, can you feel it? Can you feel the ball coming off your bat when you close your eyes?
Yeah. You know what? I haven't really thought about it that way. I mean, if that story, I know, like, people see that thing, and it's really cool to meet all the different people in Denver that have gone and were present at that game or stayed awake for that game, because I know it resonates with a lot of people because there's so much emotion coming out of me. And I shared the story. I think I shared it with you guys before. That emotion that you're seeing, it wasn't just, you know, hitting a homer off the Giants because we were ahead of them in a playoff race. In general, that 2009 year for me sucked. That was a terrible year. I lost my mom in February. You know, I had a chance to be an everyday player, starter earlier in the season. I lost that job when Hurdle got fired to some guy named Carlos Gonzalez. Cargo was really bad the first 100 at bats of the season. It was really frustrating to watch. I tell you, I've said, look, I was on a team in 2007 where all we did was care for each other and try to pull for each other. That 2009 year, I was a terrible teammate, and I knew it. I was up for arbitration. I was looking at an opportunity to play, take care of myself financially, and it was just too much. It was like it was too much for a 29-year-old kid out of Santa Barbara to like have something taken from you when you felt like it shouldn't have been taken from you. And you know, and I'm talking about not just my mom, but you know, the opportunity to play at the big league level. It's every kid's dream. And I totally retracted from the group. I was a crappy teammate, and I know it. And that moment was like, it was cathartic. You know, I'm saying goodbye. My wife had given birth to our kid about a month earlier. She turns 11 on Monday. And, it was a return to the team, you know, it was a return to like what made me a good teammate, which is I had to care more about the group than myself. And that's what that moment, like that's exactly what that moment is. When I see that moment, I'm a little bit embarrassed, you know, like I see it, I'm a little embarrassed because of how I reacted, over that period of time. But it's also nice to know that you can come back and that you have a group of guys, and teammates that knew I was fighting and struggling, that welcomed you back. If you watch that highlight, look at where the dog pile ends up. It ends up against the fence behind home plate because they could feel it. They knew it. And it wasn't just about me. I think it was about the entire group kind of embracing each other. That team ended up going to the playoffs, and unfortunately we lost to the Phillies. That still makes me mad because the Phillies won the World Series that year. Mm-hmm. But that was a hell of a team. That was a hell of a team in 2009.
My man, you're just proven right there why you're a legend and why your future is so bright in terms of a broadcaster, and you'll always have such a huge place in the heart of Rockies fans in this community. And that, my man, is why you're a legend. And, man, are we thrilled to have you on. And thank you so much, Billy.
Hey, that was awesome, man.
Appreciate it, guys. Yeah, my pleasure. Call me anytime.
There you go.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. People care about three things when buying a vehicle. Number one, price. Siltahar Motors has the best prices and financing options that fit everyone's current credit and financial situation. Get zero down and 0% financing for 72 months. Number two, selection. Siltahar's five dealers in one, offering Ford, Lincoln, Mazda, Volvo, and Maserati with hundreds of new and used cars, trucks, and SUVs on the lot. And number three, location. Siltahar's right off Highway 36 in Wadsworth, or view their entire selection online at sthmotors.com. Siltahar Motors, get everything you want out of a dealership.